Hi, this is Jeppe Gins from Fire Cider on the little Danish island Fire, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 71.
Cider Chat, 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 Chat. Cider Chat, 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 Chat. Cider Chat, 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 Chat.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am your Cider MC and the producer of this weekly podcast where we chat with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, I'm having a bit of fun with Jeppe Gins. From an island off the coast of Denmark, about 15 minutes, he tells me, and it's called Fayu, and that's also the name of the cidery. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. This past weekend, so we're talking about the month of early March, right? I started working on my cider, getting it kind of bottled up, or in this case, kegged for consumption. And I want to have a couple months here where it's just conditioning. Now, if you've been following along on the podcast, I spoke in the fall about pressing some particular blends, specifically with a single variety called The Lady. And I have fallen in love with this apple because it's just an amazing flavor profile. When I was doing some sampling this weekend, I was so happy because it has that tannins in it and it has this like residual sweetness. And I use a dry package cider yeast, nothing, you know, really fancy. I decided not to go wild with it. I did put in a little cider yeast. I wanted to kind of control that. And I think two things occurred. One is that this particular orchard that I get it from is just magnificent. You know, when you're talking about terroir, this particular orchard has it in its own style. It's very, very old orchard, colonial orchard, if you will. And it, at one point, turned into like a feral orchard, meaning that people stopped taking care of it and was left just to, you know, go on its own for a while. And then along came Carol B. Hillman, who I've also had on this chat from time to time. And if you want to find out more about New Salem Preserves, go to episode 3 with Robert Coles on building a cider house. Robert was a World War II vet, and he was a pretty good storyteller. And I was always really curious, you know, what made him decide to build that cider house. So that's episode 3. But suffice to say, I've been a friend of Carol, who is still managing the property there. This is her property, and it's called New Salem Preserves. And she hired a gentleman called Brad Maloney. I'm actually going to be meeting Brad coming up here shortly and doing a chat with him, because Brad has been an orchardist for 30 years with a specialty of pruning. And he's the one who kind of created these like apple pretzels with friends. And he has some really strong opinions about pruning and how to do it. And he's done it right, because this orchard is so magnificent just to like walk through. It's delicious. You know, it's really, the trees are immaculate. They really produce amazing apples. And it's just so clean, and it's just like something out of like a storybook. And I know all orchards have their own beauty, but this particular orchard, because you're looking at trees that are over 100 years old or older in New England, a pretty special place. And I credit both Carol and certainly Brad as an orchardist for really nurturing this orchard. So as luck had it, Carol said last fall that I could have all the apples on that particular tree called The Lady. And I did. We pressed it, but it was pressed after the apples had been crushed and let out to kind of like do a bit of maceration, where it's just kind of like oozing in its own brine. I know these are not words that we use in cider making, but that's the way I kind of see it. You know, it's kind of sweating and the starches are breaking down. And you're getting some of the color from the skins and you just come out with a much more juicier type of product there. And when they pressed it, they were like, wow, this is amazing juice. So I'm kind of like a little bit bummed that they know that. So I'm hoping I could get the lady next year too, but you know, whatever. And so it's been, it was fermented, it's been conditioning, and I've racked it over a number of times, just getting the clarity, because I'm not going to do any kind of filtering, just kind of purely racking it. It's in a 3-gallon carboy, and taking it off of the bottom schmutz, or what you'd call the lees on the bottom, and that's the sediment that drops down, or the heavy precipitants. So I let that happen, clearing it out. And then what I decided to do was to keg it, because I have this cute little 3-gallon keg that I use. And I also happen to have some large tanks of CO2, and that's what you use. Well, that's what everybody uses to, you know, at a soda bar, at a beer bar, and certainly at a cider bar to do two things. One is you could force carbonate, which is what I did, or what I am doing with the lady, and also on tap. If you don't have a pump, like the way they used to do it back in the day before they had CO2, is they would have a pump that would essentially draw the liquid up to the tap. But nowadays, most folks use CO2. And sometimes you hear, such as Guinness, and they're doing this with certain beers, and I'm sure with ciders too, where they use nitro. And that leaves a more creamier type of profile on the finished product in your glass. So this past weekend, what I did was I kegged the lady, and I'm actually going to keg two other ciders that I have. I have a Redfield blend and then about a 6-apple blend too. And the Redfield was just a wild yeast, and that's tasting really good too. So the Redfield is a particular apple. That apple really, you know, was, I believe it was brought over by Terry and Judith Maloney of West County Cider. And I talked to their son, Field Maloney, in episode 1 of Cider Chat. So if you want to hear a little bit of that backstory, they went to Geneva. I believe they brought back some wood cider. This is a long time ago before there was like so much tight control on bringing, I don't know, agricultural products back and forth. So I have that Redfield blend. I got that at Cider Days at Pine Hill Orchard this past November. And then I got another blend too. And so I'm kegging all these ciders, and I am not going to do any chaplization, which means I add sugar to it. And sometimes when you add sugar to cider, any residual yeast will kick up the fermentation again. And actually today, Yepa is going to talk a little bit about that. That is exactly what he allows his cider to do. And he gets a sparkling cider that's absolutely delicious. He bottles the cider. There's some residual yeast. He's not worrying about the sediment. And because it's being bottled, it's still conditioning the bottle. And that's called bottle conditioning. And as a result, you get some sparkling. But what has to happen there is you need to essentially leave your cider in the bottle for a long time. And I don't have that time right now. I want to have this cider ready for June. So I'm force carbonating. And I did some fun little video clips of that. So if you want to go to the Cider Chat Facebook page, it was just posted. So it should still be really easy to find on that page there. It was posted this weekend, which was like the 3rd or 4th. And you'll see what I did to force carbonate it. In short, it's pretty darn easy. You essentially rack the cider over into your keg, making sure it's all clean. And I talked about that on the YouTube clip, because the keg is a cylinder vessel. And the way the liquid gets drawn out of the keg, there is a long tube. Now, some people, especially, you know, if you forget or you're a novice, you forget that that tube is equally important to clean out before you put any of your cider in there. So I always clean the keg. I use Iofor. It's like an iodine type of sanitizer. After I kind of cleaned all the schmutz out of the keg from the last time I used it, I clean it out with the Iofor. You shake it around. It's kind of like a brown liquid. I'll typically save that liquid, pour it into the next keg I'm going to use. And then what I do with a keg, maybe it's kind of a purist thing or whatever, because I just don't like that iophore in there because I think it might contribute to a little bit of bottle shock, which is actually something that happens. And you should know when you're making cider that you can get bottle shock. And that means that after you bottle your wine or cider or beer, if you've used sulfites or you've used any kind of like cleaning solution, it takes a while sometimes for the liquid to settle down. So I won't get into the science of that, but that could happen. So what I do to kind of get the iophore out of there is I just bring my tea kettle down filled with hot water. I pour it into the keg, you know, do a little rinse, pour it out. Then I pour the rest of that tea kettle in, swish it around again, close up my keg, and I blow out all the liquid essentially by hooking it up to my CO2 tank, which has a regulator on it. All CO2 tanks have that. And you put it at a certain PSI. That's like the pressure that you're pushing it through. So I essentially have the hot water in that keg. And then now I have the spigot that I would use to, you know, take the liquid out. And I open up that spigot and just let the water pour up and out through that tubing. And I always feel much more satisfied and confident that I've done a good thorough cleaning on my keg. I don't have any kind of fancy tools. I don't have I'm not at a brewery or, you know, at a cidery that's like has a kegging system. It's pretty low tech, super easy to do. Once that is done, then I can siphon my cider into the keg. And there's even more technical ways I could do that without the cider ever like touching oxygen, because we know O2 can really, it oxidizes your product, whether it is beer, wine, or cider. But I don't worry about that. You know, keep it simple. I essentially just rack that cider over into the keg that I've reopened, you know, kind of shook out any last water, close the keg back up, and then the forced carbonation is next. I next hook it up to the regulator, the CO2, and I turn up the PSI to 30 pounds. And what you want to do is shake that CO2 into liquid. And so a lot of folks will, you know, just put the keg on their lap and kind of shake it back and forth. You'll see in the video, I just put it on the ground and take my foot and roll it back and forth. And I did that for maybe about 3 minutes. People like to do it for about 7 minutes or sometimes longer. And now that keg is actually still sitting in my basement at 30 pounds, the PSI. And I go down, you know, once a day and kind of shake it in again. And the thing to know about CO2, it's heavier than oxygen, so it kind of sinks and it needs to get into the solution. And so that's going to create a sparkling product for me. When you do forced carbonation, the bubbles that you get in your cider are going to be larger than a bottle condition, or where they do the champagne method of making cider. We've talked about this a lot on the program. If you want to hear a real detailed piece on that, I really was having Chuck Shelton. He did an awesome job talking about that, and that is in episode 56, Chuck Shelton with Albemarle Ciderworks in Virginia. And you'll get the detail what that is. But again, I'm not doing that. I'm just making it really simple for myself. I produce my cider. I don't want to add sugar. I put it in my keg and I force carbonate. So I leave it at the 30 pounds PSI. I'll look at that, you know, for the next 10 days, kind of checking it out. Eventually I'll put the tap back on the keg. I'll pour a little bit out, see if I'm satisfied with the amount of CO2 that's in there, if it's sparkling enough. If it is, then I'm going to turn down the 30 pounds down to a much lower level. So we're going down and probably maybe have it down at like 5 for a while and just leave it there and just let it kind of condition and forget about it. And that's the patience of cider making. With any of this type of fermenting, whatever you ferment, you just have to be patient and let the liquid do its job of just conditioning away. So that's where I am. That's how I spent a little bit of my weekend. Lots of fun. Tonight I'm going to do a little bit more kegging after I get this podcast all ready to go out to you, Ciderville. And I'm going to put the other ciders in some 5-gallon kegs and do the same process. I might do a little bit of blending, and I might even draw some of them out and put them in a bottle, because I know the kegs will be going, but I always like to have a little bit of bottle that I'll open like a year from now, because cider does age and it develops and it does what we call conditioning. And that's just a ton of fun. So if this is something that you do, I wish you luck. If you ever have any kind of questions about it, post it up on the Cider Chat Facebook page, and certainly post some photos. It'd be lovely to see what you're doing in your spot in Ciderville. Well, now I have this lovely little green bottle, and this is from Feiyu Cider. It was given to me by our guest on this week's chat, and that is Yip Against. He actually gave me this smaller bottle, which is half of the larger, like 750ml bottle. Both bottles are corked and capped. On the top of the cap is this, this is kind of like his brand. It's this woman tossing an apple. She looks naked, long hair, for those of us in the U.S., and you're going to hear me talk about this in the chat. It looks a little bit about those, like those sexy gals that you see on truckers' flaps of the big semi-tractor trailers going down the highway. And that's also on the cork. So that's a little bit of his brand. Feiyu is spelled F-E-J-O, and it's O with a slash through that, because that's part of the language. This is 4.3%, and this was made in 2015. This is an organic cidery. There's a lot to learn in this chat. I pre-recorded this. This is one of my chats from Asterius while I was at the International Hall of Gala Ciders. So I actually was in the hall when I walked up to Yepa and said, hey, let's do this. And we got into a conversation about the cidery. We got into the addition of different fruits into cider. It was an interesting chat. And even for myself, listening to it a couple months later as I was editing and getting it ready for all of us to listen to this week, I got a lot of info. And, you know, it's topical. What is being discussed in Europe and what is being discussed in the U.S. and what we call things, how we label it, how we standardize it, is all of importance to commercial cider makers. And in the end, as a consumer of cider and being non-commercial, for me, it's really about what the final product is. So let's open this bottle of the Feiyu cider, the demi sec, right now.
Whoa.
Lovely, rich, golden hue, like a deeper, I'll hold it up into my monitor so I could kind of get the white backdrop here. A lot of small little bubbles coming up from the bottom of this glass, which really connotates that bottle conditioning. Very tiny, tiny bubbles. Lovely to look at. Apple wafting out of this glass. This is a demi-sec, so it's like a semi-sweet. He did not stop fermentation, although he will say that he might sometimes use filtering, but not too much. It's a natural yeast. You have that farmy background on this cider, and that's the yeast speaking to me through this cider right now. And the yeast is saying, I'm natural. I'm from the terroir of this island. Out in Denmark, Feiyu is the island, and it's absolutely exquisite. So cheers to you, Yepa, and how about if we all now grab a glass and join this chat with Yepa Gens of Feiyu Cider in Denmark.
Let's go find your cider. The cider from Finland.
little island in Denmark called Fejø.
Oh, okay, Denmark. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know why I was saying Finland. That's awful. Very different. All right, so we're with the Danish cider maker right now. And these guys are pretty, pretty busy pouring a lot of things. They're a little island off the coast. Vejo cider. Probably saying it with a Spanish accent, which isn't right, but... You're taking a break, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I know that. Okay, so... Okay.
This is the WordPress...
Yes, I'm just recording a podcast. The media. There we go. Okay, so you which side are you pouring here? It's a beautiful golden hue.
It's half dry.
Say it again.
Semi-sec half dry.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what
do you say in American? Half sweet.
Half
sweet, half dry. That's the same.
Let's start with the name of the cidery.
The name of the cider is Fejø Cider. Fejø in Danish, that means island. So we are situated on a very small island in south, 200 kilometers south of Copenhagen, where there's a ferry taking us over to the island, and it takes 15 minutes.
Wow, that's not bad. That's a pretty quick ride, isn't it?
Yes.
Fejø is, am I saying that correctly, the name of the cidery, Fejø?
Fejø,
and that's spelled F-E-J-O.
Denmark, real cider trees, because in Denmark we don't have a cider tradition. Not made from real cider apples, at least. Some have experimented with eating apples and making cider out of them, but we started as the first one to plant an orchard with real cider apples, mainly French varieties and English varieties, and then some special Danish ones. Yeah.
It's absolutely delicious. Is this your... You have a couple different types of ciders that you're making. This is in a small case. So it's a cute little bottle. It's like a mini champagne bottle.
Yeah.
You're using the champagne method to...
No, we still keep... A little depot.
Okay. Yeah. It's corked. It has a little.
This cider, this
basket.
Bottle we call a you and me bottle because.
You and me.
There's one glass for each and one
that.
Glass to share.
I love
three
it.
Glasses. Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. And then you have this other bottle. It's a larger,
yes.
More classic style champagne bottle.
Yeah.
Demi-sec. And I just want to look at the name because you were saying the other name of it. Demi-sec. Help
for? Yeah, it's the same. It's same. This is just the old label, and this is a new label.
Oh, okay.
So we're changing label also to. This goes more to restaurants, and this goes more to shops.
Shops, okay, yeah. This is a great size for a cider tourist to have, so that they could take and go. Wonderful. So, how did you get into cider making?
I worked there many years in Brussels, in Belgium, and then I visited the cider regions in Normandy and Brittany and around there. And then I really wanted to make wine, but I realized that you cannot make the best wine in Denmark, at least unless the climate changes continue.
No,
but,
yeah, you need the right
you can make the best cider.
Yes, you can.
Because
fantastic.
We have the ideal climate for apples in Denmark. It's not too warm, not too cold. There's a huge difference between the warmth during the day and the coldness in the night. So they get very reddish. They get a color. And that also gives a color to the cider, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you have a beautiful, beautiful golden hue on it. It's very refreshing. There's a little nice carbonation, so there's a little bit of ring of a little mini head there. I'm drinking it out of what is like a champagne glass, a very long-stemmed glass here. which I noticed that they use quite a bit in Asturias. What is your full name?
Jeppe Gens.
Jeppe Gens.
Yeah, it's like short of gentleman in English.
I do have a very favorite colleague of mine who's called Jeppe, so I know that name quite well, and that's spelled J-E-P-P-E. And is that a Danish name?
That's a very old Danish name, yes. But it's become modern again. When I was a kid, I was the only one called that. But now I hear it everywhere, and I get a shock each time because I think they're talking to me.
Right, yeah.
When they're
That's
talking
kind of
to
funny
kids.
How that goes. So where could we get your ciders if you're... If I was coming to Denmark, of course, I could get them there, right? At any kind of good cider bar, or is it a wine bar? Where would I be getting your ciders?
Yeah, wine and beer bars.
Wine and beer bars, okay. Is it on draft at all?
No, we only make bottles.
Okay, only
until
bottles.
Until now, yeah.
All right.
We export 60%, mainly to Sweden, a bit to Germany, and then... For the first time, we will try to export to U.S. through the Shelton Brothers. We will deliver
the Shelton
to,
Brothers, yeah. Right, based in Belchertown. I know Dan Shelton and his wife Tessa. So wonderful people. Yeah. That's a good distributor, or good importer, you might say exporter. Great. So and they have a very broad reach in the U.S., so that's a good choice.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good importers, too, besides them.
And then that will... They have been commissioned, you could say, by a Danish chef who's now installed in the Grand Central Station in New York, in the waiting room where he's made a deli, I think, and a cafe and restaurant.
Right, well, Grand Central Station is like a huge building for listeners who aren't familiar with it. You come in, you take your train, or you could come right off of the street and go in and get food. There's lots of varieties. What is the name of the person that you're speaking of? Let's give him a shout-out.
It's Klaus Meyer.
Klaus Meyer.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you know what the name of his shop is going, or is?
It is in an old, huge waiting room in the Grand Central Station, National Heritage, I think it is.
So
it shouldn't be something you could miss if you look a bit around. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll try to do a little hunting and see if we could give him a little link in the show notes so that we could find out where it is.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So you got into cider making because why?
That was because I found out that you could make the best cider, that the potential for the best, world's best cider is present in Denmark.
Especially, I like how you talk, like the world's best cider. You don't hold back anything. You just like call it for what it is. And that's
We already
brilliant.
Won officially the European Championship twice. There's a competition in Stockholm with blind tasting, only not the public, but real cider connoisseur, and they test also the imported ciders into Sweden. So the big French ones are there, Eric Baron, all those guys there who are icons on the cider scene.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So there we won twice in 2012 and 2015.
Well, it's nothing like putting your ciders out there in the world and having them be tested and seeing what comes out of that. What capacity are you producing ciders every year?
The amount?
The amount.
It's rather low, you would say, 30,000 bottles.
So you'd be like an artisanal cider maker.
We are doing the whole process. We have our own orchards. We only make from our own orchards. We don't buy any apples.
So is it an orchard-based cidery? Like you have the cider house right there, and right next to it is the tanks. How is that set up?
Okay. Not right next, because on an island you have to have lots of land, a bit spread out. But we have 8 orchards. And that gives around 8 hectares.
Okay.
And then we apart from cider, we also make a little bit of apple juice. and we make some balsamico vinegar from apples. That's mainly the production, but main product is cider.
Okay, and you're putting this in stainless steel tanks. Is there any barrel aging of cider, or even a thought of like barrel aging cider at all?
Say that again.
Barrel aging cider, putting your cider in barrels. Do you?
No. But we don't want the barrel taste. Okay. We don't want the oak. So we use stainless steel, and but we have planted our orchard so that it gets the right mix, and they should all be ripe around the 1st of November, so we can collect them at once, all of them, and we know that the mix is there. There's 30% bitter, 30% bittersweet, 30% sweet, and 10% acid.
Okay.
And that's the mix. And then we collect them by hand. We store them for at least 2 weeks. That depends on which apple it is. And then we press them, and we make natural clearing by first fermentation.
Yes. So no yeast added to that at all? No, all natural, all wild yeast?
Yeah. Yeast, yes. And then it slowly, because it's organic apples, there's not much nutrients in them. So they ferment very slowly. And I think that's why we can control the process without any big trouble. No.
Can you give us an image of what your fermentation room is? Like how big it is?
Around 100 square meters,
okay.
I would say. Yeah.
All right. And how are you controlling the temperature in that room? Because that's really critical to fermentation, too.
Yeah.
What kind of, like, level of... you're doing, like, a slow fermentation here. So what is, like, the temperature level of that fermentation?
Yeah, there we are a bit lucky, because normally 1st of November in Denmark is 10 degrees.
Oh.
And 10 degrees
centigrade.
Is the temperature of cider.
Right.
From you start till you end.
Mm.
Of course, we cannot. If it's lower, then we heat the room a bit.
Okay.
But it's seldom very. I've never seen that it was higher.
Right. Well, that's perfect.
So that's quite perfect. Later, once it's in good fermentation, it's cleared. Then we don't mind so much about the temperature. It can even be frost outside. Because the tanks will not blow up by frost, because the fermentation develops heat.
Right, yeah. Right. How much snow do you get where you are in the winter?
Depends on which year, but we can get half a meter of snow.
A half a meter. And does it stay on the ground for quite a long time?
Yeah, sometimes a month, sometimes a week, and then it comes back another week. But it's not... because we are an island, we are sort of in the middle of a bathtub, so we have the warm water
it's
around
temperate,
us,
yeah.
And it takes a long time for the water to cool down.
Right.
If it cools very much down, then we get ice all over. So, but we haven't had yet.
Right. Interesting. What were you doing before you started cider making?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been doing cider for 15 years on a hobby base, really. Not that much hobby, because we sold our products, but we didn't made a living on it. It was maybe half an income.
Right.
Yeah, but the last 2 or 3 years we've had full work capacity in the firm, and that means that now we have. Raise the production, and we can live on it.
You're seeing the benefits of your hard work over all this time. Now, there's two of you involved in this, is that correct?
My wife is partly involved, yes, but otherwise I hire in people to for the harvest, and then I have I always have two or three from all over the world who wants to study cider.
Oh.
And then they help out a bit, and
like an apprentice.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we.
So people could contact you if they want to do an apprenticeship with your your cidery.
Yeah, yeah. In the autumn, yeah, we have apprentices from 1st of September until 1st of December.
Oh, that's not a bad time. Yeah. And
we've had a few Americans.
You have? Wow. Well, that's always nice to hear. Well, cider is pretty international, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a little Anglo-Saxon.
Not so much here.
A bit Spanish, Asturian,
right,
too.
Right, right. Yeah, not so much
a bit
here.
French,
no.
Too.
Right, yeah. It's all over the place. What is your title? Are you the cider maker? Is that how you say it in Danish, cider maker?
Yeah. We would say cider farmer, maybe.
Cider farmer.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah.
Cider farmer, yeah, because that's if you're an orchard-based person, then you're a cider farmer.
Yeah.
Are there other cider makers in the country, and do you have a cider association?
We do have a fruit wine association.
Fruit wine, okay.
And that includes cider makers, but it's not an ideal group to be in. So there are people who want to separate a bit, or at least create a subgroup for traditional cider, and that I can only support. The problem in Europe is maybe it's the same in the United States. There's no definition, clear definition of cider, so anything can be cider. And anybody can make anything that they call cider. So we need very much a European definition like we have for wine. There's even an international definition and what you can do and what you can't do with a cider. We need that very, very much. But I don't think it will ever come, because already now it sticks in all directions. And it will be almost impossible to find a common ground.
That is, of course, that's Anzu down at the end of the table opening a bottle. That's our key person here in Australia. So, in the U.S., I mean, it's already been, the door has been opened for cider to be with a lot of different properties that you can make it with. You could have fruit added to it, you could add spices to it and all that, so we don't have that purely just only apple only.
No.
So there's a lot of innovation, and I mean, I'm in the mindset that that only helps the cider market grow, because to compete against so many other incredible libations and craft beer and really amazing wine, you have to get the market in a way that you'll bring in drinkers from all different kinds of perspectives, trying things, and innovation is really important in the cider world.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. But the drinkers,
but at least you should be able to, when the market matures and is right in the first interest to gather interest, you need to experiment wildly.
Yes.
Maybe it was a good idea after a while to make sure that people, when they open a bottle, they know what they get.
Well, that's important.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So
I
when you
agree.
See a cider, you know more or less what is in the bottle.
Right.
And then you can call the other things something else. If you put banana in it or whatever, then don't call it cider, call it something else.
Cider with bananas.
We already have the name Perry
for
what we in the Nordic context call pear cider. Yeah, but
right.
It should rightly be called Perry.
Just Perry, right. Yeah, there's a little bit of confusion, and I feel on this podcast, speaking to cider makers like yourself, we get to kind of find this like global jargon. Play around with the semantics and see what's happening in that way. I think the one thing about the apple is that there's just so many different varieties of apples, and we're finding like there's so many different varieties of cider.
That's true.
And that it's a discerning drinker out there who will, I think we have to give some credit to the consumer. They're pretty intelligent, and they know they're going to be asking the right questions, and to kind of trust that consumer, because without that amazing consumer, cider wouldn't be where it is now.
No.
And so
you're almost convincing me. But still, I know in Argentina, I've had helper from Argentina who said they had the most marvelous cider there, and it was made from ananas.
Like licorice, anise was added to
it? No, what's it called? Anana?
Anana. Was it a herb, or is it a fruit?
Yeah.
What was it?
This is probably a quite different word in English, and I can't remember the English word.
But what was it added? Was it a fruit that was added to it, or
yeah, that's
some
fruit.
Kind of fruit?
Yeah.
But we see a lot of cider now with pineapple.
It's pineapple.
Pineapple.
It's pineapple.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry
oh
about
my
that.
Goodness,
yeah.
That's so funny. Pineapple.
Okay. Yeah,
wow.
Pineapple. And he found that this was just marvelous, and it probably is. But then, as long as you call it, at least pineapple cider.
Well,
then,
you know,
the
what I see is that a person who wants to try a pineapple cider and might say, well, I don't know about this other piece here. Mm. They'll try it, and then they start developing a palate that is broader than they ever imagined.
Yeah.
And then that opens the market. I mean, look how many different ciders we have here at the Scala Cider Affair.
Yeah.
There is hop ciders. We have the cider here with honey, which I call a sizer. And then you have sizers with or ciders with anise that we were tasting yesterday, or that Basque type of drink, the patka or paxta, which is a delivered apple drink with anise made. So. And these are traditions that have been around for a really long time. So, you know, you see in the conversation that we're having, like in the UK, there's like a real strong, like, what is proper cider? And it should be just straight up apple. But as an American cider reporter, since cider was introduced in America, it's always had other things added. Like they would add raisins and sugar if they had it to... Colonial America, they were making the classic New England cider, which had not just apples. Not that that wasn't made that way, but they were throwing stuff in from the beginning. And so my tradition, or way I was brought up, and I'm based in New England, was there was always ciders with other properties added to it. Like that wasn't unfamiliar to me. It was like that's what I knew as real cider. It wasn't until I started... podcasting and really looking at the global cider market that I saw people saying, no, if you do that, it's not cider. So it's been an education for me to see that the beauty of our world is there's so much diversity.
Yeah. There's maybe not so much adding other fruits that bothers me. It's more adding sugar.
Sugar, yeah.
Because then in my view, at least, it's no longer cider. It's fruit wine.
Fruit wine, okay.
Yeah. And there, at least, you should have a separation.
Or let the consumers know.
But
you know, it's interesting, because I've written about craft beer for a long time, and I could tell when there's a craft beer that's made with real fruit or they're using fruit flavoring. You can't... Maybe you could fool my palate some of the time, but... I think, again, it goes back to that consumer. You can taste it when it has sugar added to it. You can taste that. And there's some people who really only want that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a cider for every person.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. My preference would be to be that same kind of cider drinker as you are. I want to have a cider that has no sugar added. I want to see what the cider maker's doing, what their skill level is to just, if there's imperfections, it's going to shine through. Sugar could really mask a lot of imperfections, and it goes to a different direction. Would I turn down that cider? I don't think so. Not if it's the only cider in town. I'll have that cider, and I'll happily have it. But at the same time, you know, I'm going to be going for the style that you're making. It's, you know, that natural yeast. I love that. And I think it's like this whole collection of different cider makers... Just educating it,
I have a rule for myself, at least, saying that I would never do something to a cider that I wouldn't do to a wine. I would never pasteurize it.
Right.
I know they add sugar and it's allowed in some, and they do a pretty many things with wine,
right.
But still there's a limit to what you will do.
Right.
You would never add anything else than grapes to a wine.
Right. Well, and as a cider maker, you get to make that choice, which is you're in the perfect position for that.
And I also think I have this conviction out of love for cider. Because cider, if it really has to survive, it has to be a much more appreciated product, not something you drink to get pissed or and then you go on to something else. You should really appreciate it, and that means that we have to be more strict with ourselves, the producers, I think.
Now, are you stopping fermentation of your cider? Because this is like a semi-sweet.
Yeah.
Are you stopping?
No.
I
try to exhaust the nutrients by... it's the clearing in the beginning of the cider. And then you rake it maybe once or sometimes twice. And then if it's
natural carbonation, so you're not necessarily stopping it. So there is quite a bit of bottle conditioning happening here with your cider.
Yeah, and that's why I have this, what do you call it? In the bottom of the bottle. And I could, of course, do the dégorgement, as they say in France, with champagne. I could shoot it out.
Right.
But I for the moment, we keep... the
sediment
in the bottle, and people have to live with that, but it also gives a flavor when it stands on the sediment for a long time. It's like the wine surely. You said how I stopped it.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't. I try by these temperature raking.
Racking over.
Very rarely filtration, but sometimes I need to
filter
slightly. And then when it's stable, that means that it doesn't fall more than 2 degrees per 2 weeks. Then I put it to bottles, and it should still be alive so that it can ferment in the bottle. Otherwise, you don't get the... So it's much the champagne method.
Right.
The only thing different is that I don't take out the sediment.
Right. I really like your little cap here. It's like a sexy little photo of a woman kind of tossing an apple. This is on the top of the wire basket for the cider. It's a beautiful presentation.
And then if you notice it... Is this fire girl? It's a fire girl.
A
girl from the island.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not a real one.
How do I know it's a woman from the
because
island?
Because she's black, and that's because there's always sunshine on this island.
Oh. So it's like taken as a silhouette.
It's a drawing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a real person.
No, I know that. She has a long kind of a ponytail of hair. It's kind of like what we see on like flaps on like a truck going down the U.S., like this very sexy woman there.
Yeah, really, and it's she's really holding an apple.
She does. It looks like she's tossing it a little bit, like in a playful way, a little teasing way, like come here and taste this already. Really delightful.
Yeah.
Well, I know that we're going to be seeing you all over the map, and I'm really, really happy to have this pleasure to be able to speak with you about your cider. And
it was good to talk to you.
Yes.
And can we get the podcast over here in old Europe?
It's around the world. It's around the world.
That's the thing about the web.
It's international.
I'm so happy we had this opportunity today to speak with Jeppe and find out what is happening with cider in Denmark. And to think he's been doing this and been at it since 1999. That's pretty darn impressive. And you could taste it in the cider. Really delicious, fruit-forward cider, orchard-based cidery, organic, no chapelization, and doing that conditioning right there in the bottle. A nice presentation. I hope you get a chance to try Feiyu Cider 2, and hopefully it'll be coming into your neck of Ciderville. Fingers crossed. So a big tip of the glass, and thank you so much, Yepa, for giving me both that half bottle and the full bottle of your cider. I'll be enjoying it on this week's Sunset Cider Club meetup as we post this podcast live on Wednesday. And you can join too. I'll be doing hashtag Sunset Cider and posting a photo. And you'll see that bottle of Feiyu Cider out there. So join along online, in social media, wherever you are out there in Ciderville. And let's see what you're enjoying while you're listening to Cider Chat. This cider nomenclature, it continues to intrigue me, not only in my conversation with Yepa, but just yesterday I was able to attend an Irish whiskey tasting led by Tullamore Dhu, who has been sending out their brand ambassador from Tullamore, and her name is Jane Mayer, and she was at the local brewery that I write for called Berkshire Brewing Company in South Deerfield, Massachusetts. So Jane and her team were there, and they did an amazing job, which I think really speaks volumes for having a brand ambassador and promoting your product. She spoke about the distillation process. We had a tasting of the whiskey, a number of different bottles. One particular that everyone was coveting is called the Phoenix, and that is, there's just a couple bottles left. Absolutely smooth, smooth whiskey. I highly recommend it. What really caught my attention was when she mentioned that coming out this October, Tullamore Dhu will be releasing a whiskey that was made in cider barrels. Now, the interesting thing was, as she was speaking to the group in the tasting room there at the brewery, she just, you know, generically used the word cider. When I got to pull her to the side afterwards and say, hey, you're using cider barrels, what cider are you using? She then said, well, I was really saying that for the American audience, basically how you refer to fermented apple juice. And I was like, oh my goodness. So you weren't referring to, quote unquote, hard cider. You know, there again is that nomenclature and how it's kind of a little bit of bugger in my mind for the commercial cider makers, certainly in the U.S. and elsewhere, as Yepa was speaking, because it's not really clear. Now, it was all cool, though, in the end, because, you know, you could kind of swing it this way in that she said they are using fresh pressed apple juice. They put it in the barrel, and then shortly after, it starts fermenting. So in truth, yeah, it's cider, as we know in Ciderville, which means it's fermented. But the fact that nomenclature, that little stickiness there, and she's viewing Americans looking at cider purely as sweet cider in terms of being non-fermented, fresh pressed juice, was quite interesting. And if I hadn't asked her, I would have been led to believe, as a cider connoisseur, I suppose, to thinking that they're using, I don't know, some kind of Irish cider that was, you know, being commercially made. Quite interesting. And I think it gave me pause to really make sure that we are actually hearing what we believe we know to be true about cider when people are kind of using it here or there, and how this Irish whiskey company is seeing American craft cider. Wow, right? So anyways, I'm waiting to hear more about that come October when they release it to the U.S., and I'm hoping that maybe we could catch up again with Tullamore Dhu, and I could try a little bit of that Irish whiskey. I mean, just alone, it's just fantastic and quite amazing. So that was the start of my work week, and I have to say, it really set me off on the right track this week. Well, I'd also like to give a big old a tip of the glass to the patrons of A Cider Chat. You too can become a patron, and I hope you do consider doing so. It's pretty darn easy to do. There's a link at ciderchat.com, or you could just Google Patreon, put in P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and it's a sign-up where you are essentially helping to support this podcast to keep on thriving and putting out chats like this one with Yepa and some amazing chats coming up with the likes of Shea Comfort, the Yeast Whisperer, Charles McGonigal, who we consider a little bit of a mad scientist. He'll be speaking on both Perry and sensory analysis. We're also going to be speaking with Dan Young, who is now on the board of the United States Cider Maker Association, and so many more amazing folks coming up in this chat. Ooh. So there's a lot of work to be done, and no money, no funny, no whiskey, no beer, no cider. So please consider becoming a patron today. And if you're a commercial cider maker, I do have a special offer just for you. Go to the Cider Going Up campaign page, or you could go to the Patreon page too and help keep this chat thriving. Big tip of the glass to Current Cider in Pennsylvania, who has been a patron of Cider Chat since I first launched that campaign. Thank you so much. We'll be getting an update from Current Cider soon as they are expanding their cidery and in the midst of building a new facility. Very exciting indeed. In the meanwhile, I'm going to roll out of here and get this podcast uploaded and ready for you, Ciderville. I hope you have a good day and look for my tweets, hashtag Sunset Cider Club, this Wednesday, the day the podcast goes live, and every Wednesday thereafter. This is Rhea Wincaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!